Well, all right, my favorite time of the week. Welcome in. Happy Thursday. This is the Bite Me Fishing Show. Lots to cover today, as always, with Captain Scott Null, Captain Caleb McCumber, and Captain Dean Thomas. I'm John Lopez. Glad you're here. So we're going to get into artificial baits today. But I do want to mention, let's just dig right in, and we'll get to some of the other stuff that we want to share with you in just a bit. And let's start right here, because last week we were talking about artificial shrimp and being sure to work them slow. It's just so hard to work it that slow. I mean, I don't know what it is. Just that gene in me wants to just work it a little faster, and I slow it down and I think I'm going slow. And I've had that same conversation with other friends of mine that fish. You got to go a little slower and just barely pop it once in a while. I'm like, I can't. Go ahead, Caleb.
I fished that tournament all week with a cracked rib. I got real good at small, slow twitches. Tramadol makes you fish real cool.
artificial baits for, actually it was on the group page. He made the post, and then I reached out and we got the question on what he wanted. I know I'm going to get a lot of answers on this, and I'm ready for them. Maybe this is something y'all can discuss in a future episode. So as a total newbie to fishing, top waters in salt water, what baits should I be buying? I think we can extend that a little bit into just artificial baits for newbies in general. And let's name names here, you know, because that's what people, that's the question we always get, you know, what are you throwing? What color was it? Et cetera. We all have our personal favorites. I was throwing that knock and tail white down in that clear. I could not wait to get down to that clear water to throw that white knock and tail into the, when we were fishing for trout. And then I was throwing the Spook Junior, you know, the white with the red head. That's down there. When I'm in the Middle Coast, when I'm in East Matagorda, it's something different. But let's get what you guys, for newbies, what you would recommend. Caleb, I'm going to start with you. People love to throw artificials. It's a little bit purer. It's one of those things that you have more fun, more sense of satisfaction when you can catch a fish on an artificial, but a lot of people are intimidated. So let's talk to the newbies. And as I put in the rundown to you guys, I think a lot of old salts, you know, that are stuck in some old habits might get something out of this too.
Probably 90% of my fishing is the 3-inch cow shad from DOA. I like there's a straight white one that I throw a lot. There's one called Texas Croaker. It's got a purple back and a gold belly. And then I'll throw a black and gold one every now and again. I throw some K Wigglers, the ball tail jerk shad.
That's what Dan was throwing this week.
Yeah. And then for trout, I'm throwing a head and one knocker. And for redfish, I'm either throwing the Skitterwalk or the PT7, just depending on where the grass is and what it's doing. Skitterwalk colors, I like the white with the red head, and I like the black and gold. That's what I throw in Skitterwalks with the headings when I'm fishing for trout is pink and chrome, black and chrome. I like stuff with chrome bellies on it. And really, I don't, you wouldn't need anything else in my boat if you fish with me. Now, you know, I'm a quirky guy. Yeah, for sure.
We're going to get to that in a little bit too.
But if
this is a big bait episode today.
Yeah, but if I was a new guy that you know, I want to go buy four or five things to have in my boat, and that would actually be a piece of advice. Don't go buy a million different baits. Learn how to catch fish with four or five baits, then expand off of that. And so, I mean, that's all I'd have in my boat. So I had a couple different size jig heads and go to work.
Scott, I know you get this question a lot. What are you telling them?
That PT7 is going to be one of the top waters I'm going to throw, because I can throw it into anything and get it back. You know, it's not going to hang up on anything. The fish seem to grab a hold of it a little better. People have that problem with top waters a lot, where they, you know, fish comes up and bangs it and knocks it in the air, and they don't ever really get hooked up. I think a part of that is the fish feels that hard bait, and these being a soft plastic top water, they grab a hold of it and hold on to it a little longer. Soft plastic, same thing. Those 3-inch paddle tails, the cow shad is money for me. I throw a lot of the Fiji chicks color. It's light on the bottom, dark on the top, chartreuse tail. Mm-hmm. And then that Texas croaker has kind of taken over. I mean, I'm starting to throw it a little bit more than Fiji these days. As far as other top waters, you know, mirror lure, you know, something small, I'll typically, because I'm up in shallow water so much, if you throw the big top waters, it's like a bomb going off. So throwing the little smaller top waters works out better, like a little top pup. They're real easy to work. You can make them walk real easy. Same thing with the PT7. They're really good beginner baits to learn how to walk the dog and make it zigzag.
Mm-hmm.
If you're having problems with that, you can get one of the wake baits, like a baby man's baby minus one, and just throw it out and reel it straight back in, and it wiggles on its own. That's a good, really good beginner bait.
One thing, just for clarity's sake, you've mentioned the PT7 in past episodes, but for those who don't, you know, who don't know, it is a, it's a thick, it's almost like a thick cigar, but it's short. Like if you smoke, if you smoked half a cigar, it's a nice thick cigar. It's a soft plastic that's that thick, and it's weedless. And I threw a little bit of that this weekend, and it was just absolutely, you know, a fantastic bait. You're the one that really got me hooked on that. But that's what that is. And as far as like throwing anything else, I'm interested, you know, what your thoughts are on, you know, I've said this a million times, I'm a big Twitch bait fan. I love those little mirror lures that Scott knows all the numbers. You know what? I'm gonna impress you right now, but I'm cheating. I'm on Google.
We see you looking at your computer screen.
I know. I'm
yeah, on that's Google. Not very impressive when you start looking it up.
No. The listeners don't know that unless you spoil it like you just did. So black, white, and silver. Dang it! It doesn't have the number. I can't impress you after all.
Oh, and so we're the ones that told off on him, Scott.
The ones that has a little prop in front, the little prop in back. Dang, I love that bait. That's a good one, and it's not that hard to work, Scott.
Yeah, and with the propellers, it makes a little more noise, and you don't have to walk it as much. You're just more or less just ripping it and making the propellers work for you. Something else that, yeah, if Camille's going to listen to this, she's going to throw a fit if I don't say it. Mm-hmm. The 1/8
altogether
and
4 ounce. Altogether now.
Gold spoons.
Gold spoon.
Got to have a gold spoon on the boat. Mm-hmm. Just the weedless gold spoon. Rig it up, put a split ring on the front, and attach a swivel to that split ring, then tie off to it. And that way your line doesn't get all twisted up. Mm-hmm. As soon as I get them, I take them all out of the package. I buy them by the dozen, and immediately at the workbench, put the split ring and a swivel on there so that we can have them ready.
Yeah. And the other part that we were doing, you know, Dean is just like us on those, cause you mentioned this, Scott, with the big hooks on those hard baits. Every top water we threw had we replaced the treble hooks with the single drop hook. And I'm telling you, I think I lost one redfish near the boat. It was a nice one too. I was kind of mad, but other than that, every hookup we had, every big bite we had, there's no difference, man. Caleb, I know you do this. It's a lot easier to throw. It's a lot safer. You're not snagging things on your boat and your pants leg or your shorts and maybe the back of your head. I would highly recommend whatever top water you choose to take those hooks. Spend a day, man. Spend an afternoon when it's raining and you're not fishing or it's too cold, too windy, and change those treble hooks. I use the 2/0 as it's a smaller hook as the hook that I use, but that's something that a lot of people who are throwing for the first time, especially when you're throwing for the first time, Caleb, it's or the first few times, those treble hooks tend to hook everything, including you.
Oh yeah, they get you. That your line gets all kinds of tangled up in them. They get hung up in a net. They're a pain. The single hooks are way safer. In fact, had I been using a treble hook this weekend, I would have stuck 3 hooks all the way to the bone of my finger instead of 1. So I really recommend everybody go the safer route, because I'm right now that I can still fill this 1 hole, and 3 would really suck.
All right, so now we got to know.
I was up on the tower and Daniel hooked up to a fish, and we have rod holders on the top of our tower. And I reached back and put my rod in what I thought was a rod holder and just let it go.
Oh, well,
I don't hook my hook in the reel keep and the hook keeper whenever I'm when, you know, when like, ooh, gotta get down, get one netted now.
Yeah, right?
I just reel it up on the top of my rod. And so that the weight of the reel and the rod traveled 7 feet and it stopped. Gosh. By a hook, it went in my knuckle, and Daniel's still fighting a fish. So I just grabbed that sucker and ripped it out. And there's a saying on our boat. If I'm bleeding, the fishing is better, which is pretty much every day. And Daniel's like, Dan, you can see the relief in Daniel's eyes when he saw blood. And he's like, all right, we're going to be in it now. But yeah, that sucked. That will be saying, hey, Scott, I got that new Tranks from Shimano. That sucker's light. It's smooth. That is the primo redfish reel. And I'm glad I wasn't using my old brand. Because son of a gun, that reel is heavier, and that sure would have hurt worse.
So, what was this, Scott? What reel is this?
They've had them in some bigger sizes, and now they're getting the smaller hand size bait casters.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a 150, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. It's a 150, but it doesn't feel like a 150. It fishes like the old 50s,
right?
It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're super super tough little reel, and the gearing in them is made for big fish.
Yeah.
I use them on tarpon on the bigger size, the 200, 300, and 400.
Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead, Caleb.
What freaked me out about it is the drag is so stinking smooth. I've been using one particular brand for a long time. And so by the way, that fish is pulling that, I can pretty well tell you within a half a pound what that fish weighs by the way he's pulling. I can tell you if he's probably an over or if he's a slot, right? That Tranks, man, it's just the drag super silky, and it's just like zzz, zzz, and I'm like, I don't have any idea what the hell I've just caught, but it feels nice.
We'll find out. As soon as I get this hook out of my finger,
right?
We'll see what it is. God, you're the best, and by the best, I mean you're for entertainment purposes.
Well, that's why I'm really here, right? Have I ever came up with anything with any actual substance?
Sure, absolutely. You're an expert, man. Yeah, you're one of the best fishermen I know.
Coming up, do you know what to look for and how to test a new boat? We got you covered next, right here on the Bite Me Fishing Show on Sports. Welcome back to the Bite Me Fishing Show.
All right, so, and you mentioned the DOAs. Your poppers finally there, Scott. You got a whole mess of them.
Yeah.
Your big poppers for the tarpon?
Yeah, that's a Russell lure thing. Mm-hmm. It's a medium sized tuna popper, about 5 inches long. And when the fish are feeding up on top, we use them a lot on those jacks and the bull reds.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they go down, everybody else is kind of standing around looking, waiting for them to come back up. And we'll throw those big poppers and just start
real, real, real.
And I mean, you can make those things pop and throw water a foot in the air, and it's like ringing a dinner bell, and they'll come right back up. It's the best popper I've used.
It looks sweet. And I've never thrown it, but it looks sweet. So Fishing Tackle Unlimited, Anglers Anonymous, of course. I actually need to get back out there, restock them again with that OG sauce. Now, that thing's been doing great. I'm happy. And it's really, really good. A lot of people giving us some great compliments. So I said this was going to be the lure show, the bait show. Caleb, we got to get to you in a second. But before we do, I want to get to Chet. Chet's been working on Scott's boat. And I chatted with him about making the boat. And when people like Scott, like you, like myself, are in the market for a new boat, like a lot of listeners are right now, what do you look for? Like every boat looks cool and nice and spiffy and clean and shiny. But when you look at the hulls and the lines on the hull and the lines on the boat, what are you looking for? And we are with Chet Morimpudi down at Freedom Boats, freedomboatsusa.com. The world headquarters, if you will. And Chet, man, I haven't talked to you in a long time, and our listeners love the insight and the expertise that you give. And so this came up as a question, and I thought, well, I've got just the guy to talk about that, because, you know, everybody looks to want to buy a boat, you know, and they look at the lines of a boat, and they might not have the eye that you have. Also, maybe the hull of a boat. Like, you know, it's like kicking the tires when you buy a new car. A lot of people just say, I don't know what to do. I'm going to kick the tire a little bit. So a lot of people think, I got to buy a boat. I'm going to look at the hull. So specifically, let's start with the most important thing. And this has always been important to me. You know, a boat is well built. And of course, you guys have, you know, the Freedom Chiquita, which is, you know, just a terrific seller for you. You're coming out with a 16 footer. You're coming out with the 26 foot General that Captain Scott's going to be getting. I have the Freedom Warrior 23, and of course the Patriot as well. is it kind of in the middle there. When you're looking and build at a well-built boat, people always talk about the look of it, but the lines are important. Can you explain what the lines that you need to be looking for? They need to be straight here. They need to be done this way. When you're looking at the lines of a boat from the top down, what are you looking at?
That is a really good question, John. I mean, a lot of the people, they just look at the boat, the way it is fit, finish, and they want to buy it. But if you want to get into the detail, the lines of a boat is what makes the boat perform. So the lines of a boat is just like the EKG of your heart. Like, again, depending upon the style of the boat, those lines are designed in such a way. For example, everybody knows the Chiquita, 5 foot of tunnel in the back. So a boat like that style, like a scooter boat, which is flat with a small tunnel, you should have skid rails. So if you see at the bottom of the boat, you're going to see two thick lines going, starting at the aft of the boat, going past center line of the boat. So those two, when it's a flat bottom boat, when you try to turn, it slides. So these two rails will help from sliding.
Mm-hmm.
So A, those skid rails will help more hydrodynamic to cut the water. Two, it'll help you when you start making turns. And the other thing, what you need to look in that class of a boat is for dry ride. To get a dry ride, you need to have spray rails.
Mm-hmm.
So what this does is it catches all the water that is being cut by the boat, and it so you have a dry ride. So those are the two things you're going to need in a class of a boat like this. Mm-hmm. One is skid rails, two is a spray rails, which
right.
We have in the Chiquita. That's why it runs skinny and dry.
Right.
And coming to the next class of boats, what we have, the Patriot, which is the 18, the 23 Warrior, 26 General, and don't spill the beans, we're coming with the 20-foot Commander later this year.
So hey, you spilled the beans. I didn't spill the beans. You spilled the beans.
It's being recorded. My bad. You can edit it, John. Anyway, no big deal. Somebody will know someday. So this class of boats, the way the catamaran style hulls are, so the lines are really, really important. One, for speed. Two, zero drag. Three, to lift the boat to run shallow. And four, to have a dry ride. Anybody who's looking at boats in this class, because there are plenty other boat builders who build similar kind of boats, but he or she who's trying to get into this class of boats, they need to look at the design of the tunnel and the sponsons. Sponsons, when they stand on the back of the boat or on the front of the boat, if those lines are dead straight, it's going to be a fast boat. Like, it's going to be super fast.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a drawback if the boat is too fast. So the turning is a challenging because it's only meant to go straight fast. So that way, so they have to see straight lines from the forward of the center line of the boat to the end of the boat, almost, and last couple of feet at the end of the boat, it should have a small curve.
Mm-hmm.
So that will make it lift it and then turn it rather than going fast all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like a straight line from A to B. You need to have a curve in the front and a straight line in the middle, almost, and then a small curve in the back. I mean, without getting on the boat, they can tell that, you know, this is a fast-running boat with capability of maneuvering, turning left and right. Then when they step to the edge of the boat, they need to see a 90 degree or like a sharp corner. That sharp corner will help it from the spray. Like if you want a dry ride boat, so this corner will be above the waterline. So mm-hmm. it will catch all the spray and it will give you a dry ride. And then below the spray lines, there will be another line just away from the center line, which will be called as a lift rail.
Yeah.
So this is a sharp 90 degree corner. It will be under the water line.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the corners they have to look at, or you can call these are the lines they need to look in the boat that will define how we're going to run, how we're going to perform, and how shallow it can run on the water.
Yeah. And I can attest for the Warrior, which, you know, I have. It also, getting back to your first point on the turns and such, you have the right lines there. It keeps it from not just sliding, but burping, you know, but a lot of times the water will burp out and, you know, that I'm guessing you're the expert will prevent that as well.
That is correct. So the basic fundamental phenomenon in a catamaran boat is it creates an air pocket underneath the tunnel, and that's what keeps it run on the water rather than with the water.
Right.
So once you lose your air pocket, which is called burping out, mm-hmm. boom, you know, you're going to lose it. So here comes the design of the tunnel. It's not the lines, but the way these sponsors are designed, so it will entrap the air without losing while you're making a turn or whatnot.
Right. And the better and deeper the tunnel without burping, the easier and skinnier and drier it will ride, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Well, that's always fascinating stuff for me, Chet. And obviously, you guys are working hard down there. I was chatting with you a little bit, you know, off air. But that's really good stuff. I know you guys are building some very quality boats, handmade, and those lines are going to be – I've seen you working with it, man. I mean, you check it and double-check it and triple-check it and make sure it's fitting just right. And you got some great guys down there. FreedomBoatsUSA.com if anybody wants to get down there and look a little closer at the boats. Or then go to dealerships, of course. You've got dealerships at the Boatyard in Kima. Master Marine in San Antonio, certainly Ron Hoover, three locations, Ron Hoover in Donna, and where else?
Rockport and Corpus Christi.
There you go. Donna, Rockport, and Corpus Christi, if you want to see what a whale boat really looks like. That's Chet Morimpudi. We'll get back to the boat. Oh, it's 10 times more frustrating for the guys making the boats. I mean, you know, they want it done so quickly. Go ahead, Caleb.
I say it every 3 days.
Yeah.
Brian,
I bet you they love you over at JH.
Oh, they love me the best over there. Brian, the guy building my Sabine, he's on vacation in Montana, and I called him 3 times.
Oh, that's Sabine. You called him on vacation?
Yeah, well, you know, I called him. I said, hey, man, I don't mind bugging you while you're at work at all, but I also don't mind bugging you while you're on vacation, and I need you to take care of this for me.
So you'll get your boat in about early 2024.
You know.
Well, to be fair, Brian does go on vacation a lot. So
he does.
There is that.
Yeah.
Hey, he said, I got to get the whole story. We'll tell the whole story next week. But he called me yesterday so dang excited. And he said when they got off of the water in Montana that there were some game wardens there that asked them if they had seen any otters. And apparently there had been an otter attack recently. And they're wanting to I got to get the whole story. He was so dang excited.
You're like, yes, also, I need to know this.
Yes, he had Montana reception, so I couldn't get. I'll know all of it next week. I can't wait.
Man, we're gonna have to. No, you know what? Let's do it. Let's do it real quick. I was gonna bump this, but let's go ahead and hit the cork, the topwater and corky discussion because we had to bump it last week, and I don't want to bump it again. Because we pretty much know that the what would Scott do and what would Caleb do is going to be pretty short and sweet until we get some weather change. So the question about this is the strategies throwing topwater and corkies year round. Quote, question, you guys all have said you throw corkies and topwaters all year. Does anything change how you work them in warm water versus cold? And especially shallow / shorelines versus deeper water. One more thing, man, you're asking a lot. Y'all talked about topwaters from a boat. Are corkies not good from a boat? I'm going to start with you, Caleb, because we started to bring up this question. I put it on the rundown when we had Dean on, and he's like, yeah, no, I don't do that. He doesn't do any cork. He doesn't play corkies. He doesn't, not down there. I said, all right, we'll get it when Caleb comes back from his tournament. So I'm going to start with you. You have the question in front of you. If you open my email,
he's on us an email.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, but all things corkies and topwater. Does anything change warm water versus cold, shallow versus deep for you? And then we'll get into from a boat.
Easy, simple question. And cold, I start with a real slow, subtle presentation. And warm water, it's more erratic. It's faster. Corkies, topwaters, both of them. If you look around, there's bait darting around everywhere. It's warm. It feels good. It's shooting around the cold water. You don't see much bait moving around. When it is, it's moving slower. So it's just matching what that lure is supposed to be. I'm matching what the mullet do. Out of the boat, the only time that I think a corky could be on the better side of effective, I guess, I don't know how to say that, but is if you are anchored up. It's a finesse bait. It needs twitches. It needs pauses. It needs some consistency. And when you're floating and drifting towards it, you give yourself, it's a lot tougher. It's tougher to control the depth of where it's at, where if your power pulled down, then you can throw it out. You can let it sink to where you want it to be. You can twitch it. You can pause it. You can do all that kind of stuff. Topwater out of the boat, no problem. It's easy. It's just a fast chit, quirky, yeah. Little bit different. I wouldn't throw it out of the boat. The guy that taught me, at least gave me a solid base foundation on quirky. I don't know how many trout over 30 that man's caught, but it's been so many that he'll hold it up and say, look, here's a 30 and turn it loose. No pictures, no nothing. He doesn't even mean anything to him anymore. And the same guy that does that when we drift, he's hard headed, man. He wants to throw that quirky all the time. And drifting. I bet I've seen him catch 5 trout in my life drifting with that quirky versus what he can do with it waiting. So to me, that answers it.
But now I'll throw a quirky from a boat if I have the power pole down, but I keep the rod tip way down, practically in the water, and work it almost as if you're waiting, you know, mm-hmm. And so you can really work it the same way. Could keep your rod tip down. Top water is no problem ever. Scott, your thoughts on those two points, but also, and this wasn't in the question, but it just got me thinking because we were changing this up a little bit. As the ripple in the water got a little bigger later in the day, I started working my top water a little faster than I was earlier, just to create that bigger ruckus. And that's, it was effective. But your thoughts on all that?
And pretty much what Caleb said, just watch what the bait's doing, you know, watch what the mullet are doing, watch what everything else is doing. Let the fish tell you how fast it needs to be. Mm-hmm. There's also times when everything's moving really quick that the longer pauses happen to work for some reason. I can't explain that one. Don't know why that would be, but there are days when the fish just ignore it when it's going too fast.
Mm-hmm.
So start pausing it. The best thing to do is just vary your retrieve throughout the year and see what works and try to remember what it is that's working for you. That's always the hardest part. You know, you get out there and you're throwing it at your normal speed and you're doing that, you're not getting anything. So I'm going to change it up a little bit and you start changing it up. Then all of a sudden you get a bite and you go, what the hell was I
doing? What was I doing?
Yeah. God dang. I forgot exactly how I was working that.
Or the adrenaline kicks in and you're changing what you're doing because you just got
you start moving it faster. You catch a fish and that happens all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see it on the boat a lot.
Happens to me.
Yeah, it happens to everybody.
Somebody catches a fish and next thing you know they're reeling it and skipping a soft plastic on the top.
Yeah, exactly.
But as far as like from a boat, the biggest thing you got to remember is now your rod angle is so much higher when you're standing in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And it completely changes the way that a lure works,
right,
on the water. Just the angle of the line going down to the bait. On the top water, I like for it to be coming, you know, parallel to the water. And if you're standing up so high, you got that severe angle and it pulls the nose of the bait up a little bit more. So you got to get the rod tip way down, like you were talking about with the corky.
Yeah.
Do the same thing on the top water.
We were doing that, not necessarily all the way to the where they're pointing it into the water, but we're just like almost parallel to the boat. We were working the top waters. Corky, as I said, but we were drifting. So it's just a feel to keep, make sure the bait works that way. Here's another point, Scott, that we actually were talking about this as well. You know how we always have that discussion, or we've had that discussion of after you get that blow up, do you pause, you know, your top water? And Caleb, I want to get your thoughts on this too before we get to what would y'all do, or do you just start working it? And I've always been with you, Scott. Like every time I get a blow up, I just like keep working it because no bait is going to commit suicide. You know, we were talking about that. You've talked about that. But every once in a while, you know, Dean would let it just sit. And boom. So that's almost a feel thing too. But by and large, if you get a blow up, just keep working it.
Yeah, I typically keep working it. I've watched too many fish when customers have had a blow up and they stop it, you know, just out of, you know, their reaction, immediate reaction, stop it and let it come back and get it. Mm-hmm. And I've watched so many redfish just swim up to it, look at it and swim off. Mm-hmm. It's like they lose all interest in it when it quits moving. I'm sure, you know, it works from time to time. And the rougher the water, the more likely it would be to work, because then, you know, the waves are pushing that lure around a little bit. Maybe it looks like they've stunned it and now the water's kind of washing it back and forth and they come back and get it. But if it's dead calm, definitely keep working it because you don't want them to get a good look at it.
Yeah. Coming up, what does Caleb look for when he decides to pause a topwater or a corky? We'll pick that up next here on Sports Radio 610. All right, we're back. Glad you could join us, Caleb.
You know what a redfish cookie is, John?
A redfish cookie. Redfish I have a feeling cookie. You're going to tell me.
It's some little crabs that swim around on the top. You mm-hmm. say, ooh, look, redfish cookies.
Yeah.
Whenever those suckers are present, that's whenever I'll pause it a whole lot.
Really?
I'll twitch it 5 or 6 times, and then I'll just let it sit and rock in the waves and rattle a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There's been, I've won 3 tournaments off of not moving my topwater. But like Scott said, in other scenarios, the redfish are coming at it, then it stops and they kind of lose interest and move away.
Yeah.
But whenever I see those crabs everywhere, and you'll see it when you're out fishing, you'll be fishing and over, you know, over there yonder, whoosh, and looks yep. like they drop a cannonball in the water and you're throwing topwater all over the place and can't get bit. A lot of the times that pause will do it. So those crabs are sitting, they're not moving very fast at all.
And redfish cookies.
Yep. And yeah, whenever there's redfish cookies around, that's whenever I'll pause it.
All right. Here's that version, I think 5 or 6 weeks in a row. We're gonna keep doing this until it starts to change, guys. So let's start with Scott.
I've been listening to the thunder all day long sitting outside. But the winds are supposed to be light. And if it does rain, I mean, my highs are showing in the low 80s. Which is kind of unusual right now. I mean, it's August. Typical highs are in the mid-90s. So if that's happening and we get a little bit of rain, that might liven things up a little bit in the shallows. If I were a betting man, I would say it ain't going to rain. But if it does, I would venture to go up there into the shallow water and take advantage of that little bit of cooler. And they might go ahead and feed all day. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
With the calmer winds, I might – want to head out to the jetties in this new little boat and take a prowl around and see if I can find me some tarpon. Should be pretty good. You know, if the wind does exactly what this forecast says,
yeah,
they're showing, you know, 5 to 10 miles an hour and 1 to 2 foot at 6 seconds. That's pretty sweet. And, been hearing a whole lot about, some cobia and some triple tails and stuff like that out there as well. So
I haven't caught a triple tail forever.
If the wind does what they say it is, it's wide open. I mean, you can go anywhere and do anything you want to do. And just watch out for those little rainstorms. And because typically this time of year, when you do start getting rain after it's been this dry, you get a whole lot of electricity in them.
Yeah.
And that's not going to be something I'm going to go out and play around. I ain't dancing naked in no rain when there's
not with lightning. You never know where it's going to strike. Gus, Caleb, you just sent me the most depressing picture that Scott consistently sends us. It's that little blue dot of where you are and then where all the rain is.
Yeah,
there's like rain all around red, that little blue dot.
There's a yellow and red horseshoe around my house right now, and it is blue skies right above me.
The blue dot of where you are is bone dry. Everywhere else, yep. There's rain.
I actually sent a little video clip of it to Dan Jack up there in New York,
because
mm-hmm. we laugh about the dome over my house. And this morning there was thunderstorms literally all the way around the house, and my blue dot was perfectly clear.
Yeah.
And it was just, and they were forming up and then dying before they could get to me. Mm-hmm. And then they'd build up behind me, you know, inland from me. And I sent him a little video clip of it. Said, yep, dome is in effect.
Dome is in effect. Caleb, what would you do? What are you going to do?
Scott pretty well said exactly what the heck I would do. What I am doing, y'all get your umbrellas out, because me and my brother-in-law have rented a big house on Lake Livingston to take my son and my nephew white bass fishing.
All right. So
starting about Friday morning, is going to be widespread rain for 3 days. I promise you.
It's going to be a frog choker.
But no, Scott's dead right. If those air temperatures come down, then the fish are going to likely move up into shallower water where it's cooling off from that air. I think that could be pretty cool. It's really light winds. So if they're up there in that shallow water pushing around, you should be able to see their wakes. Like Scott said, this is the time of year for offshore to fire up. And speaking of, mm-hmm. Scott, check this out. Texas Saltwater Fishing Magazine called me today and they are writing the little article because Cade is on the cover holding a big old kingfish this month.
How about that?
So once he figures out how to write his name legibly, we'll sell some autographed Cade on the cover of the magazines.
All right.
It was exactly this time of year, and it was the light winds like we have forecast, and the water cleaned up, and we were catching kingfish and cobia and just whatever you wanted, not too far off the shoreline. I wouldn't go way out, like Scott said. These pop up storms are gonna,
yeah.
They could be quick and they could be severe, but. You know, we were within a mile of the beach, and it was nice out there. It was clear water, and it's the time of year whenever those species start coming on up. So maybe check that out.
Congrats on that. He's going to be pumped. He's already pumped, I'm sure.
He made it before I did, though. He made it. I've been trying to get in that magazine for over a decade, and he catches one stinking fish and gets his picture up there. I'm not sure how to feel about it.
Yeah, but you got a lot of pictures on Facebook of being stuck, of broken props, of.
That, I feel like that could be a cover one day.
It should be Caleb right here for some I came across your little one of your pictures from your two competitions ago. I just saved it on my phone, but some of the prints on that, it was the bobcat, the real close up, that one placed right or won.
That came in second
bobcat, yeah. But you can get some great prints of that at scottnullphotography.com. And as I was mentioning, be sure to check out the Bite Me group page. The raffle, live auction, and silent auction items are up for grabs at the Feeding Frenzy. They're all posted there. I mean, I can't even begin to go through them all right here. It's some awesome, awesome stuff. And remember, when you come to the Feeding Frenzy and get to bid on some of those things, it's all for a good cause. Obviously, Heroes on the Water and Texas Boys Outdoor. So if you're in the market for, let's say, a new big dog deer blind, which is really cool, you can see the picture on the group page, for example, or you need a new, maybe use a skid steer on your property for a weekend. You don't want to buy one, use it for a weekend, or maybe you want to do a big time cast and blast trip. Go ahead and do it, and go and check it out for a couple of great causes. Just join the group page if you haven't already, and be sure to hit the I agree button. Coming up, you absolutely have to hear our next guest. He was dealt a tough hand and ultimately lost both arms and both legs. Less than 2 months later, he was fishing, casting, reeling, everything. It's an incredible story. Next, here on Sports Radio 610.